The number one thing that really stops organizations from being successful, the number one thing that stops people from achieving the results they want, is the ability or inability to leverage this one characteristic. And that's what we're going to be talking about on today's Speak and Get What You Want podcast with the great Hank Smith. How are you, Hank?
Hey, good to see you again, Chad. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. It's great to be with you. And Hank, we're going to be talking about a subject that's very near and dear to your heart. In fact, you travel the world speaking about it specifically, and that is the importance of trust and and building trust and really leading with trust. What got you so passionate about trust?
Oh, I was back in 2008, I decided to go back and get a doctorate degree. For anybody listening who hasn't gone back to get a doctorate or thinking about it, I say it's a lot like dying, right? I left in 2008, 2009, came back to life in 2014. My kids had grown up. What I wanted to do was something I loved. I knew I was going to eat, drink, and sleep this topic for 5 years. So I started looking for a program that would fit what I was hoping to do. And that's what I came out with, was high trust organizations. How do they work? What's under the hood? What's the anatomy of a high trust organization? So I spent 5 years doing it, loved it, had to take a break when I was done. It's like eating the same meal every day for 5 years. But then came back and I'm able to share with organizations this, the principles I learned, some of the research-based practices, and it's been a joy, honestly, to go speak to different organizations about this. It opens their eyes. They think, I can do that, right? Give me something I can do. Give me something practical. I love to be inspired, Chad. You know, I love to listen to an inspiring speaker, but I really like to know, I like to leave the room with tools, things I can do to build trust. So that was my hope, and it's been one of the greatest joys of my life to share.
I love that. And so you come to organizations, you go, okay, listen, if you can build trust within the people that you're working with, the people in your organization, you're going to achieve the results you want. And what's the first step in doing that?
Okay. So yeah, the first, I show them, it took me 3 years to put together, but I'll show them a lit review basically, which says trust will affect every other part of the organization, all the way down to, for a school, it's student achievement. For a business, it's the bottom line. It'll affect turnover. It'll affect customer satisfaction, employee satisfaction. It'll affect the way, the morale in the company. Just everything changes. So if I can show you, hey, if we can adjust this one thing, we can change almost every other metric. That's pretty exciting to most people, rather than working on each individual thing. Yeah. I can affect one thing and I can improve every other part of my business. So first of all, I try to get them to understand the importance. I say it's a lot like make an analogy like the oil in your car. The oil in your car is not the most important part of your car, right? It's not your engine. But without that oil, a great engine is going to burn out. So you might have a great system, a great product. You might have something that's going to, it's going to hit the marketplace and is going to take you places. But if you run out of oil, especially if you're driving that car fast and hard, you're gonna burn everything out pretty quickly. So, what do you do when the low oil light comes on? Right? What do you? Some of us push it a little too far, right? Some of us say, oh, "I'll be all right," just a little bit further, I'll be fine. And then others of us, we think, "No, I've got to do something about that now. I know it could turn into something terrible later."
Okay. So, but wait, Hank, let me real quick. Do they recognize it though? When you go into an organization, when you see the low fuel light pop on, low oil, I need oil. But do the organizations that you go into, do they immediately recognize that that's what is missing?
That's step one. I say, okay, let's talk about what the low oil lights are in an organization, right? And then I'll put a list on the board of basically low oil lights, things like people are concealing their weaknesses, People aren't asking for help. They're not offering to help. People are dreading meetings. They're avoiding meetings. People are super suspicious of change. They have, you know, Chad, have you ever seen the meeting after the meeting?
Yeah.
Right, where we have a meeting and then we develop these little coteries, right, where we say, okay, here, us five are going to go get together and we're almost going to have a common enemy. When people get emotional really fast, things are heating up quickly. I'll say, you know, I apply a lot of this to marriage and family too.
Right.
You know, if you've ever said to your wife, like, hey, you look nice today. And she says, what is that supposed to mean? Right. Okay. Wow. Things heat up really quickly. Those are all low oil lights. It doesn't mean that the car's bad. It doesn't mean we have to toss out. It doesn't mean the people are bad. It just means the trust is low. So when you see those low oil lights, every car has them, every organization has them, especially those who, you know, are working really hard. You know, you've got your foot on the gas quite a bit, then yeah, you've got to watch for these low oil lights. And once I show them, they seem to think, oh wait, I have seen those.
Right.
I didn't know those were lights of, you know, that was an indication that trust is burning or burning through it.
Right. So that first step, they recognize it. Then it's like,
first
okay,
of all, yeah.
Well, how do I put the oil in?
Yeah. Now what's next? So that's what we move to next is, okay, if you want to build trust in somewhere where trust is hurting, you have to start. And I wish there was another way around it, Chad. I tell people all the time that I talked to one guy in, I think he was out in Michigan. He said, hey, what do I got to say to get my people to trust me? I was like, oh man, we're going to have it's going to be rough. Because honestly, there's only one way to build trust in any relationship, and that is through, and this is research based, that's through interaction that is frequent, personal, positive, and low risk. So think about that in your marriage. Frequent, personal, positive, low risk interaction. Think about it as a parent. Frequent, personal, positive, low risk interaction. Same thing with employees. Frequent, personal, positive, low risk interaction. Most people understand the idea of frequent. Most people understand the idea of personal, right? Like LeBron James and I have a lot of interaction. It's not super personal, right? Because he's on TV and I'm at home. Frequent, personal, positive, meaning everybody walks away from this, you know, this little interaction saying, oh, that was good. And low risk. Low risk is probably the one that most people don't understand. It's where I don't make the other person feel vulnerable, right? So maybe I text my kids. Maybe I have a family group chat. Right. And it's pretty low risk. No one is talking about grades on there. Everyone's just sharing fun little memes or, you know, my wife will shoot out a pep talk to everybody. It's pretty low risk. So think about that in an organization. If you're the boss, you're out of your office and you're just, you know, calling people by name, asking about their family, asking about, you know, what their kids are doing, what their spouse is doing, how they're doing. I did one interview once and I asked people, you know, why do you trust? I think it was in a school. I said, why do you trust this principal? Why does everybody trust this principal? And all it was just renaming frequent, personal, positive, low risk interaction. They would even describe in tears, you know, how, she came to my daughter's wedding. I remember one woman said, she came to my sister's funeral. I'll never forget that, she said. Wow. Right? Just little, these are not huge, okay, I've got to go change how everybody feels about trust, right? This is just, they just interact. I call them brushstrokes. Mm. They're like brushstrokes on a painting, which, you know, by themselves in isolation, they're not super significant. But if you do them over and over and over, quite a few brushstrokes, that creates a masterpiece, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's phenomenal.
So yeah, so that's how to, if we're going to get off the ground, that's it. And I'll tell the people I train, listen, if you're not willing to do this, I can't get you to high trust. Mm. Right? If you're not willing to fuel the fire with frequent, personal, positive, low risk interaction, then I can't get you to where you want to be, which is, right, you know, really high trust relationships in marriage or with your kids. So that's step one. And then I'll take groups through that. I'll say, okay, what are some of those in your organization? What would that look like? It's pretty fun when they when it opens up to them going, oh wow, it is worth my time to get out of my office, right? And go talk to people. Think about this. A parent might say, how come my kid will talk to their friends and not to me? Well, who do they have all the frequent, personal, positive, low-risk interaction with, right? How come my wife will talk to her mom and not to me? Well, who does she have all the frequent, positive, personal, low-risk interaction
with? That's so good.
That's where it happens.
Wow. So good. And so the first step, that's the first step.
That's step one.
And then
it's finding those little brushstrokes.
Yeah. Okay. And then step two takes you where?
Step two then is we start talking about, all right, how do we go from, okay, we've got a good thing going to, wow, we are one of the high trust organizations. We are a high trust marriage. We are a high trust family. Usually, if there's a problem with trust, and I'm putting in the interaction that we talked about there, it usually comes down to four characteristics. One, I call it CORE, because in order to graduate with a PhD, you have to have an acronym. So I call it CORE, C-O-R-E, compassion, openness, reliability, and expertise. So if I don't trust you, Chad, and you're putting in, like, you know, you're trying to get to know me, you're trying to put in these little brushstrokes, what's wrong with Hank? Why doesn't he trust me? It's usually one of these four things. Compassion means I don't think you care about me. I for some reason, maybe it's my experience with people like you, maybe it's my childhood, or maybe it's something that you're doing that you're not seeing. But I don't think you truly care about me or my career. Openness means I don't think you're sharing with me information that I would want. You're hiding things. Or openness, you're sharing things that should be confidential, right? It can work both ways. Reliability means you're great, but you're not consistently great. We all have that friend who's there for us once every 2 years, right? It's just, you're not consistent. And lastly, expertise. Expertise is a competency issue. So it's, Chad, you might really care about me. You might think that Hank, he shares everything that he's supposed to share, and he's consistent. He just has no idea what he's doing, right? That's expertise. That's competency based. So if someone says, okay, well, how do I increase trust in my organization outside of the interaction we talked about? We look at these four things. How can we increase compassion? How can we develop openness? How can we be more reliable? And how can we increase our expertise, our competence?
And Hank, when you see that with a family or an organization, a school, a business, whatever it might be, which of those four is usually the one that's most absent or absent the most?
It just absolutely depends on usually the market, right? Or the industry that they're in. For highly technical jobs, it's usually compassion, because let's face it. I'm a pilot, right? I don't really have to show a lot of compassion or openness or reliability. If I'm an expert, that's what matters. I've spoken a lot of dentist's office. I don't know why that's happened. But when you go to dental school, they really don't teach you about how to help people feel loved and, you know, what to share, when to share it, and how to be a reliable leader. Mostly you're working on your expertise. But then you get in there and you're dealing with all these staff and with dental hygienists and you're dealing with vendors and you're thinking, I just went to school to be a dentist, right? So, but other times, you know, if it's a school, sometimes it's openness, right? I don't want to share, you know, Chad, you've been a teacher. Being a teacher is a pretty intimate part. You know, it's who you are. It's not just necessarily your skills. It's, you know, when I come in and I look at your teaching and I critique your teaching, I'm basically critiquing everything about you. So oftentimes it's that openness that really matters, when to be open and when to give that feedback and when to hold back, when to not offer offered, you know, some sort of, we call it constructive feedback, but usually it just comes off as criticism. I usually, for me, I'll spend a lot of my time on that first compassion, mostly because charity covereth a multitude of sins, right? If I know you care about me, I will cut you all sorts of slack. But if I don't think you care about me, man, that will taint almost every single interaction that we have. So I spend a lot of time there talking about formal authority versus moral authority. Are you more permissive or authoritarian in your leadership? And is there a way to hold someone to high standards and maintain the concern and care for them? Can you do both? So I'll spend a lot of time on those type of issues. I try to help people develop a third alternative, because sometimes it's like, okay, am I going to be the good guy or the bad guy? Right, Chad, you've probably done this as a parent. Am I going to be the drill sergeant or am I going to be the doormat? I've got to be one or the other.
Right.
Actually, you don't. You don't have to be one or the other. There is a way to both be warm, demanding, and respectful. You actually can. Stephen Covey called it the third alternative. In fact, he was working on that book before he passed away. He was working on a book he was calling The Third Alternative, which is, can I be both demanding and high care for a person? And yeah, you can. We all know people who do it.
I love that, because so often when we choose one lane, we just go, oh, I guess I have to stay in this lane because I chose that lane. But you just gave people permission to say, no, actually, you can successfully navigate both of them.
Yeah, you can. And if you think about it, most of us lean one way or the other. Think about your wife. Does she lean more, you know, towards being a permissive or a demanding parent? I'll usually do this with parents. I'll say, okay, your child hasn't cleaned their room. And it's a rule in the family that every Saturday we clean our room. All right. They haven't done it. What does the permissive parent do? And they usually say, I'll just do it for them, right? And I'll do it for them, and they'll learn how to do it, because I'll show them that I love them, right? And I'll say, how is that usually working out for you, right? It usually isn't working out. They usually think, oh, great, mom's going to take care of it for me, or dad's going to take care of it for me. On the other side is we lean towards authoritarian, right? Demanding. We'll go in. This is me. I don't know if this is you, Chad, but it's me. If I have to lean one way, I'll say, you know, call them by their full name. Mason Savage Smith, you get down here right now. He comes down. All right. What's our rule, Mason? Our room is supposed to be clean. Is this room clean to you? No, it is not. Right. And then I'm really authoritarian, and I damage the relationship. So the permissive parent doesn't hold the accountability, right? There's no accountability. And the authoritarian parent destroys the relationship. Yeah, and I think what you just said there is, no, there's a way to do both. There's a way to both keep the relationship and keep up the accountability. And so that's a big part of compassion, is learning the way to do both, to be both high demand and high care.
And I love that you bring up Dennis. My son-in-law's in dental school right now. And he, but what you said, like, it's not because he's like, oh, I'm so compassionate, I'm just full of this love, I want to go be a dentist, right? That's not what drives him, right? So my daughter Reagan helps coach him along those lines. But the reality is understanding, like, okay, I'm really good over here, but as a dentist, you know, I need to understand these other areas.
They usually don't have a class on that.
They don't.
Right? Like I've talked to dentists and they're saying, no, I never had a class on how to create a high trust organization, right? I was just taught how to be a great dentist. And then I'd get thrown in and I'm trying to create a firm, right? I'm trying to create a team, and I've never been trained on this, and they usually love it when someone like me comes in and goes, it's actually not as hard as you think to put together a team. Just follow a couple consistent rules. Let's look at compassion, openness, reliability. Let's look at competence. And usually they go, oh, it's like, it's, you've given me somewhere to go, right? You've given me some tools that I can actually use.
Well, and ironically, well, what's ironic about all this, Hank, is that when people leave the dentist office and when people rave about their dentist, 90% of the time, it's because they understand that core concept that you're teaching right there, right?
100%.
No one's saying, oh man, the way that my filling is feeling today, right? Yeah. Because most dentists are fairly competent. Most dentists are, yeah. But they don't rave about that. They rave about, oh my goodness, my dentist was so caring, so compassionate. And my wife, Cassie, has a huge fear of the dentist. And so her experience is based solely on that core concept.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, some of the research on malpractice suits with doctors it's not necessarily that the doctor had like shoddy medical work. Mm. It's usually the doctor had shoddy medical work and something else. It was that they treated me poorly, right? So but think of this, doctors who have a tendency to, shouldn't say have a tendency, doctors who get sued for malpractice usually on average spend less time with their patients.
Interesting.
Second, they weren't likely, those who get sued are not likely to make like orienting comments like, first we're gonna do this, and then second we're gonna do this, and hey, I'm gonna have some time for you to ask questions. Third, those who get sued in general are not those who have been trained on how to listen. Right. Just to listen to somebody. And then lastly, those who get sued are much less likely to be funny with their patients. So it's usually that people sue for malpractice for bad medical care and something else. I didn't like the way I was treated by the person. Right. And we just said this earlier, but I'll say it again. Charity covereth a multitude of sins. People will actually cut you a lot of slack when they know they're cared about.
That's amazing. It's just, it's everyone listening though, Hank, goes, yeah, that makes sense. But putting it into practice is the key, you know. And I've worked with a lot of attorneys and law firms over the years. And the number one reason why an attorney is reported to the Bar Association, number one reason is not because of bad legal practice. It's because of lack of communication. They didn't talk.
Right.
Wait, what?
I was treated poorly.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And so understanding and first, I mean, you just, once you understand it and realize, okay, wait, I can do this, because self-awareness is key. And the most successful people on this earth are those who are self-aware and recognize that, okay, wait, I'm lacking in this particular area.
Yeah, the emotional IQ. They're thinking, wait, something's wrong. I'm not able to, I'm not forming these relationships. People are not listening to me. And as soon as they go, wait, what's going on? Then someone like you or I can say, wait. Okay, now that you're open to it, let me show you some things.
Wow, that's amazing. Because now that you recognize the check oil is light is on.
There you
now
go.
That you've recognized.
Now I can help you. Come on into the Jiffy Lube, right? And let me show you something. And they're really small. I love getting the feedback from someone who writes to me, you know, 6 months later and says, I really put into practice some of the things you taught us, and it's actually worked. It's really happened. We're able to give and receive feedback like never before. That is so hard to do, Chad. It's so hard as a leader to give feedback, critical feedback that someone needs, without them going right into their limbic system, right? Fight or flight or freeze. And they would actually take feedback and implement it. That's something that rarely happens in an organization. We pretend that it happens. Right. We all smile and nod and say, okay, yeah, that's really good feedback. Thank you. But really what I did was I destroyed the relationship, and they go home to their spouse saying, my manager's such a jerk, right? Because he told me this and that. And of course their spouse backs him up. Their spouse is like, yeah, he is a jerk. And here I thought I gave them awesome feedback. No, you didn't. I mean, think about this one, Chad. This is a funny one. Think about the mother-in-law. Think about your mom coming over to give your wife advice, right? And she probably smiled and went, that's really great. Thank you so much. That's so helpful. And then the moment she left, your wife looked at you and said, how did you live with that woman, right? Because giving feedback is so difficult. Feedback that's received. And then to hear that from people I've been able to train and talk to, oh, it's so great. They'll say, it's actually working. We're actually giving and receiving feedback. And that's just one thing that happens when trust goes up. So many other things improve as well.
It's incredible that one piece, like you can go into organizations and say, look, I'm gonna give you one thing that is going to impact and improve every aspect of your business.
Every aspect. And it's and some just don't buy into it. You know that. Some just think, I don't do the lovey-dovey stuff. And that's not what this is about. This is really, this will affect the bottom line. It's just hard to put your money into it because it's it doesn't feel like maybe you're affecting the bottom line, but you are. If I can really move the needle on the trust in your organization, I can move the needle on every other thing you want to have happen. It's really fun. It's really fun to do when someone buys in.
Oh, absolutely. And I love that emphasis on that C, that compassion, because it really does drive everything. I was with TK Stratton. He's on this show often, and he just bought this large apartment building in Scottsdale. And I was with him and we were walking through the apartment building, and all the workers there know he's the owner, right? And he talks and stops and says, great job. I was just in the room. You were down the hall. The painting's amazing. And he's saying that to all the workers the entire way. And I'm sitting there going, he understands what he's doing, but it's like, he's creating this. He's just leveraging that C, because now everyone leaves going, I'm going to do even a better job. And the trust they have in that owner is just phenomenal.
It's really fun when I talk to employees in high trust organizations. Mm-hmm. They'll often say things like, you know, sometimes I don't want to do it. Sometimes I don't want to put in this extra time, this extra energy, this extra creativity. Because Chad, I can buy your time, but I can't buy your creativity.
Right.
Why do they give it? They'll say something like, I want to do it for him, or I want to do it for her. I want to take care of him because he takes care of me, right?
I love that.
I want to help her because of how much she helps me. They'll put their leader first at times because the leader puts them first. It's a really beautiful thing to watch.
I love that.
Not just from a business standpoint, but just from a human standpoint.
Sure.
It's fun to watch people succeed because of these principles.
I love that. Hank, I love what you shared. So powerful, so impactful. If a company or organization wants you to come into and speak to them, what's the best way they can reach out to you?
Oh, the easiest way is to get a hold of my assistant. I don't know. Can
they message you on Instagram or?
Yeah, they can message me on Instagram. Her email is heather@hanksmith.com. And she runs the show. I'm sure many people listening go, yeah, without my assistant, I think my life would be a disaster. And that really is. Because I'll, you know, Chad, I'll meet with someone and say, hey, can we set something up? Yeah, absolutely. Give me your email. Never happens.
That's
right?
Exactly.
Heather's the one that actually makes it happen. She follows through.
Well,
Heather at HankSmith.com. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And I can see how when people bring you into their organizations, that one element, that oil being changed, that oil being filled will have massive, massive impact. Hank.
Oh, it's so fun to watch.
Thanks for being with us. Thanks for what you shared.
You
such incredible insights. Appreciate what you're doing.
Yeah. Thank you, Chad. It's good to see you again, brother.
Take care, man. See you. Bye now.